Hey, this is Tommy Chong, and you're listening to The Whole Podcast.
Welcome to The Whole. I am Rob Sprans.
I'm Frank Adele Valley.
I'm Lori Levine.
Very excited. Joined by Jim Brewer. Jim, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, crew.
You are here to firstly talk about your new tour, which we started touching on already, the Freedom of Laughter tour, which you have you're going to be starting up as soon as like this weekend, right? From what I looked at on the website,
this week, Thursday, out of here.
You're done.
If the plows come,
I call my agent and I said, "Listen, I'd love to snow coat this and say." I really just need to get, dude, I'm running out of funds. I got three kids. One's in college. One's going to private school. Going to have to yank her from that. And the bills are up here, but no salary in a year. I ain't no Maniscalco cash. Kevin Hart. Either. I saw Maniscalco. You know, you're $50 billion a year. He can take off for the next decade. Jim Brewer cannot do that. So, yeah, if I got to do 12 shows for the price of my theater show, that's what I'll do. I don't have much of a choice right now. So I'm just plowing till the summertime. It could be because I just purchased something that I'm in way over my head and I don't want my family to know yet.
What did you get? They're not going to watch. What did you get?
I bought a house.
You bought a house. That's a good purchase, at least. I thought you were going to, like, usually when somebody whispers.
I said, how much? I said, this much. I went, I'll figure it out. Comedy clubs, get me it now. You'll see at the end of this week, I have a whole new website with, like, new merchandise, everything. Like, you want to talk to me for a half hour alone on Zoom? Coffee with Brew. Come on in.
Brew with Brew.
I went from, I ain't doing that stuff. That's corny. To like, yeah, we do shout outs. One-on-ones for a half hour.
You're going to do meet and greets during a pandemic? Yeah, you're doing.
In the alleyways.
a back alley meet and greet.
Yeah. I'm like, listen, $200, but you got to meet me around the corner. There's a Taco Bell across the street. Go right by the drive-thru. I'll be standing right there. If you bring anyone, it's another $40. Don't mess around. I'm doing this for you.
Yeah, you're not at the point where you're doing like wrestling guys where they all go and they sign the photos, the lines of the 8x10s. You're not going to be doing that anytime soon, right? Those conventions.
No, I don't plan on. I don't plan on getting. Listen, exaggerate. I do. I haven't worked in. I did lose a big, big, big salary this year. But at the end of the day, I've been very blessed my whole career to basically do everything I wanted to do. And sometimes that's doing nothing. And I'm okay. I'm not going to – if it comes to the point where I'm like, listen – I have bongos and I had this on the Metallica tour right there. I don't know if you guys can see it, but Lars Ulrich touched those bongos and I'll take the highest bidder right now. I'm not at that point, but,
well,
I do want to get out there.
I was concerned when you leaned in about your purchase. I thought it was going to be one of those like midlife crisis. I just bought a 67 Challenger all suit.
No, I drive a freaking a Honda Insight, and I roll up the gigs and I go, what are you doing? I'm like, it's 50 miles to the gallon. $18 to fill it up on empty.
I used to do, I had a Prius at one point, and I used to, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I used to actually brag to people about that. It was like, yeah, I got the Prius, I got like 49 miles a gallon, bro. What's your gas, bro?
And the neighborhood I live in, everyone knows I'm a white trash, blue collar guy, even though I live amongst their eliteness. They already know. There's no hiding it. There's no hiding it.
Yeah. So, you know, you want to talk about blue collar guy and growing up. You know, there's you and I, with the exception of the fame and success, we have a lot in common as far as growing up in that metal community. Like, I totally grew up metal big time. As a matter of fact, this comes up a lot, but you might as well see that. Is that's my metal look from back in the day. So that's what I was working with. So
that is awesome. I wish I had a picture of me and my mullet.
So is that what you went, mullet?
Yeah, yeah. I went a little bit of mullet. I went dangling cross earring.
Nice.
And that's because back then that was just to let gay people know, hey, listen, man, it's in the left ear. I'm not for sale right, in your world. I'm cool with your world, but until I put on the right ear, I'm not into that. I'll dance with you and hang out with you and all that, but left ear, I'm out. It's metal.
Yeah, see, but you...
Dangling cross was metal. Stud, you think you're cool. Cross, metal.
Yeah, but I kind of
went... I'm doing a podcast, my apologies.
I went halfway.
Can you get my... Hold on. Yeah. Can you please get my denim jacket with the painting on the back, please? I want to show them.
What is it a painting of?
It's got to be an album. It's an album, but you called it a painting because they don't know about the stuff. So here's a question: Did you do the bandana over the shoulder with the MC, or did you just do the painted jacket?
A painted jacket, and I would tie the bandana to the belt loop with
Ooh, that's cool.
With the wallet, the chain.
Of course, you gotta have that,
which see, I still will wear.
See, you were the type that my type would get our ass kicked by, like the guys with the mullets, and that were a little more. There was two different types of metal. It was you were a little more hair metal, or you were a little more like hardcore rock and roll metal, and usually the mullet guys would be the guys I knew not to fuck with. Like, I wouldn't mess with those guys.
Well, Jim, did you ever get a perm?
No. God, no. Someone tried to. That's not the one. There should be one other one. Like, I'll take this one.
Wait. We got more than one.
It says, hold on a second. It's painted on the back. Big painting. Can't miss it.
I see
it. It says Defenders
the
of the Faith.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, holy shit.
It's fucking sweet.
That is like, did you bedazzle the blade?
Was it British steel?
Yeah, that's yes. Judas Priest.
And you know what, Lori? The fact that you say it with such confusion, it already just marks my age and yours.
Yeah, but you know what, though? That's Judas Priest, Lori.
She's
show
thinking
some respect.
Steel mill, and that's okay. This is the beginning of history. See, you learned
Wait
about the book 1984, which is pretty much now its existence, as much as no one wants to believe it. They're all like, yeah, we're just it's COVID and yeah, we're just getting censored. There's no takeover. Everyone take the vaccine. Okay. Yeah, sure. All right.
People are dying in China that don't exist.
I love the propaganda. This warned me about all this now, way back in high school. I would listen to the words of Electric Eye about about watching everything you do. And, you know, people are like, what is that? I'm like, it's the future. It's metal. You should learn the lyrics. Maybe you're like, yes, that one. it says something else. I don't know what it means. This was my motto. Ready? Please.
All right.
Oh, sleeves are cut off.
Screaming for vengeance, right?
Screaming.
I knew it.
For vengeance. And that's pretty much right where I'm at in life.
right now,
but with a much nicer smile.
What? But both of those are they look like they're signed.
Yeah.
They are. You know, the one thing is, like, once I kind of got somewhere and stuck to this, you know, like, you think, like, once you become famous, you you start moving up to the Bruno Mars of the world. And no, I stuck with the Priest and the Metallicas and the AC/DCs, and then I eventually come across them all, and
I've got
and you
some
start respect. Hanging, and you start hanging out with them. You're like, what? How did this happen? Like,
well, yeah, that's actually where I wanted to go. But before that, just respect on the cutoffs on the sleeves too.
Like, can you imagine me walking around with that now? What a joke! What a
you should one day you should just go out see that, and the Challenger would have been a perfect combo. It would have been perfect. So I did actually want to touch on that because you know this. You've been able to kind of get to know all of these people between, you know, let's start with AC/DC.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the beginning, you're doing impressions of Brian Johnson, which you nail to a point that I can't even comprehend how well you do that without your throat falling out.
It definitely hurts from the word go. Good, I'm paying attention.
All right. So
I got ADD.
It's all good. So how do you wind up just him becoming a buddy of yours? Because now it's just, I mean, he was on your album, which I want to talk about in a minute too, but did you see the clip? Or
He reached out. I was living in New York City, so I guess it was the end. Yeah, it had to be the SNL years. And My wife answered the phone. She's like, this guy sounds like, I don't know, he sounds like he's wasted. He sounds like he's like a pirate. And I pick up the phone, and it's him. It's the singer of AC. He's like, Jimmy, son. I'm having this fucking party down in the fucking Sarasota. And then when you come fucking place for my wife, and she got this fucking theater. I really need to fight. It's a great fucking deal. You're beautiful, my son. You and the guy from fucking the firehouse and everything. And I fire down and I'll shoot you into it. I didn't know what he was talking about. I just said, yeah. So that's how it started. And it was funny because you know Pete Corielli at the time. Me and Pete are friends. And I'm thinking, I'm going down for a Brian Johnson event. I got to tell my wife, like, hey, listen, he just wants to meet another comedian. So he asked for me, and, like, so I'm going to bring Pete. And we beat the crap out of Sarasota, Florida, for, like, 48 straight hours. So that was the beginning of getting to know him. And then he would always come see my shows. And he'd always say to me, you know, Jim, if anything ever happened to me, I'm going to tell Angus you should take over. Like, it's really funny. Like, no, serious. You got a hell of a voice, my son. And I just, I didn't really. He's one of the funniest human beings. He's always telling jokes. But that was the beginning of, wow. I'm talking with a singer of AC/DC. And then when I had a radio show on Sirius, he came in there a couple times. He would sing. It was nutso.
You sang with him, yeah.
Yeah, it was nutso. You know, where I just, I don't know. It was that's the world I am most comfortable with. I can't stand Hollywood. I'm not a big fan of a lot of comedians. And what I mean by that is I love all stand-up comedy, but we're like cranky old women that talk about everyone. And it's just, I never enjoyed that scene. I couldn't wait to get out of it. It was so, but the rock world, they have their ego, but very rarely would I get that ego from them. We're like, hey, we're the, you know, this is our, it's just I'm very comfortable in that environment, extremely comfortable in that environment. Matter of fact, I have more good friends that are in the rock world than pretty much any other world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you did your own metal rock album. which, you know what, I gotta say, I was very surprised. It's very good. Like, I'm not saying that I wouldn't think you would put out a good product, but when I heard, I didn't know how much of it was going to be you just doing impressions versus what it was actually going to be, and it was actually really good. If you don't mind, I want to play a quick little clip of one of the tunes. You cool with that? Or you don't...
I need you to do whatever. I'm curious to see which one it is.
All right, here. That's funny, but it's really good. It's good, dude.
Well, it was made. It was. I learned a lot about the music industry. It was supposed to be not just a record. I had a grand master plan, and the master plan was I wanted this to be a family heavy metal show, very similar to Rock of Ages.
Okay.
Meaning, the whole album was supposed to be a concept album, and it was picture yourself going to a theater, and it's set up looking like a garage, and then the garage doors opens with a clock that my wife is gone with the kids for an hour and a half, and there's the entertainment. I tell a story, and then it becomes a rock ridiculous, which is my fantasy thing, and it was me talking about my teenage girls, and then here comes the teenage girl song. And then it was me talking about a song, and then comes this song. And then so I had this whole crazy concept, but I realized you need a boatload of cash to launch something like that, which I thought was really interesting. But whatever. It's all good.
It was fun
while it lasted. I mean, watch. Brian Johnson singing on the album was just—he's singing the lyrics, and you're going, "What the hell is going on right now? What the hell is?" And he would—we said—we set up a whole studio for him where we had 7 different mics just in case one kept crapping out on us. Right. So we go, "Whenever you're ready, go." He goes, "Yeah, I'm ready." We go, well, you jump in the studio, and he goes, I don't go on no studio, my son. I use a handheld mic, and I stay here in the room with the board so I can see the fellas react like a concert. What? So he records in the room where with the producer, with all the board, with a handheld. Do it again. Do it. And we're all standing there. This close to him going, what the fuck is what? Usually you're in the, you know, this closed room and you sing and you lit.
Yeah.
No. He's karaokeing it. That's how he records. Just that's hopping crazy. Around, singing like he's live with people around him. I was completely blown out of my mind with that.
Yeah, and you're watching one of your heroes sing one of your songs in front of you. It was crazy.
And I'd be a liar if I said, I was already like, okay, so I'll get a place in Turks and Caicos. Then I'm going to buy some leather pants. You know, I'm getting a kangaroo. I want baby giraffe. I'm getting exotic animals. This is it. This is it. So it's a good thing it didn't happen. I probably would have been a dick.
Yeah. And you did that on Metal Blade, too. Brian Slagle was a guest on our show a couple of times. He's a good friend of mine, actually. He's a really nice guy.
Brian was good. He heard a song I did, a Christmas song. And the Christmas song was very Megadeth, a Megadeth hook. It's called Santa Claus Ain't Coming to Town. He heard that. And he's like, will you make a whole album like that? And we were listening to it. I'll never forget. He came to see me in Irvine, California. And he left And I said, should I have let him listen to this thing, this album? Because he wanted to make an album. So he was on the highway, came back. He listened to the song in a little rental car next to a dumpster. And I'm dead serious. We were next to a dumpster. And he just went, if you're going to do a whole album like that, I would love to make it. I went, all right. And then we were done. And I was all hopped up because I had the manager who managed Slipknot. I'm like, they got Slipknot. And I fell into the whole, you know, the things we do. We're like, well, this person manages that one. So clearly, I'm going to be as big, if not bigger. Right. And none of
I don't want to write any more jokes. No more jokes. Everything's
I ain't a joke guy now. Right.
That's right.
You've been around about, yeah, fucking busting your balls, Henry. So
you turn around to the wife and be like, get the jacket. Get the jacket. Get the jacket.
So that's how all that went down. And, you know, if someone came along, it's funny. Someone just reached me out to see if they were open for a couple investors, literally for the album. I went, we'd have to sit down. You know, I'd left that boat already. Once I hear that sound on a project, it's real hard to bring me back in the harbor. It's out of here. It's gone.
Yeah, I hear it. Too bad, because, I mean, look, I could see you taking it somewhere for sure. But, you know, and before I even move on, though, from the music, there's another one. Again, I'm like, this guy gets to, you know, and deservedly so, because you've earned it. But then you get to open for
Metallica.
Yeah, that was
like,
crazy.
I mean, like, you go from one, like, it's like the two biggest legends of rock, one after another. And you're opening for them in stadiums, no less.
Yeah, that didn't suck. So how that came about was Hetfield, the singer, reached out to me. Now, I did things for them before. And when he asked me to, you know, I met Lars many, many years ago. I lived in New York. He was in the hallways at SNL. And I said, what are you doing? And he goes, dude, Lars. I said, I know who you are. What are you doing? He goes, I'm looking for the studio, the 8H. I said, Jesus Christ, come with me. What are you? He goes, you know me? I'm like, dude, I saw you open for Ozzy in 86. Do I know you? I live and breathe you. I drove 9 hours when I lived in Florida to come see you. I've seen every single tour. I've seen you, Monsters of Rock. I've seen every tour. He's like, fuck, are you serious? Like, yeah. So, matter of fact, I remember that night I had my wife bring over my Metallica jersey, wore it up on stage at the end of the night for Good Nights. And Lorne Michaels on Monday goes, I come in his office and he goes, Jim, what was up with the Metallica jersey? Oh, I said, Lorne, it was, he goes, don't start flaking out on me.
Just get your address.
I no offense, but come on, bro, it's Metallica. Anyway, so then I became friends with James, blah, blah, blah. So James reaches out. And he goes, just as a text, thinking about having you come on tour with us. Not sure what it is. Is this something that interests you?
Yeah.
So it took like 5 minutes for me to wake up after hitting the floor, passing out. So I pick up, I go, yeah, and I vomited ideas. Oh, God, let me tell you something. I will not let you down. I will crush you. I know your audience. I swear to God, I will crush this bar. You got it. Maybe we can do this and I can do that. Oh, God. And I hear nothing. And I mean nothing for like 2-3 months. And I went, damn.
I ruined
P.S. Cut to. The manager says, calls me, and he goes, hey, Brewer, are you at your house this Sunday? Yeah. He goes, I'm going to come to your house in Jersey. I want to talk to you about something. I want to talk to you about this thing James brought up. My house? He goes, yeah. Okay.
It's comes so weird.
Right? He comes to my house. See, and this is where I know them. James is like a brother to me. Our kids grew up together. So we're family. So it's weird. My kids would be like, hey, Mr. Hetfield said this. And other people like, Mr. Hetfield, did your kid just say Mr. Hetfield? Like, yes, James. What do you mean? So I'm out of the loop of, oh, yeah, by the way, they're one of the biggest bands in history, whether you know this. So everything they do is top secret. I'm not really thinking that. So the manager comes to the house. I go, what's up? Swear to God. He takes his laptop, boom, pops open the laptop, and he goes, okay, so the tour starts in September here. It's going to start in Wisconsin, and then we do two-week intervals. We go 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. I checked your schedule. There's only like two or three dates that may be in the problem, and blah, blah, blah. So is this something that I want you to talk to your wife? Are you into this? And I went, you what am I doing? He goes, don't worry about that. We're going to figure all that. Are you into it?
Figure it out.
Like, yeah. And he goes, great. Cause we announced, don't say nothing. We announce it tomorrow morning on Rolling Stone and Howard Stern. Like, what? And that's, then boom, the next day it was the press. Like, and we want your name on it. Cause we want our followers and blah, blah, blah. Holy crap. Now I didn't know what I was doing. And I'm a diehard fan, so I know I want to go sit in a Metallica show and watch a comedian. It's not going to happen. So I was stressed out. I was really stressed out. And I started writing bits. And the management was like, okay, you come out and you shoot T-shirts. I went, oh, no. Oh, wow. Okay. And then
you dress like Mr. Met.
Yeah, and then maybe we have a competition. And then maybe we have this. Okay, so this is the best. This is rock star stuff. This is the stuff they're in a film. Now, it's hard to wrangle in Lars. Lars is like, you got to call my assistant. He's that guy. James is like, what's up, dude? He's just right to James. Yeah. Lars, though, he's kind of a mastermind of things. So I said, hey, Lars, I want to talk to you about this tour. Are you around? He goes, yeah, I'm around these 3 days of June. Oh, because I'm playing out there. I'm not playing out there. So I book San Francisco. I go flying out to San Francisco. I text him, hey, man, I'm in San Francisco. You around? He's like, I'm around 2 o'clock on Tuesday. Okay. Meet me here. I go to this place. It's his place. For his workers, which
okay.
Let me tell you something, you want to be working for him. It's just gorgeous, huge, overlooks the bed. It's like, oh my God. So I go to, it's literally like a tower, and I go to the top of this tower and overlooking things. And she goes, would you let, you know, oh, here's some tea or coffee, and Mr. Ulrich will be up here. I'm like, Mr. Ulrich, oh my God, it's hilarious. So he comes up and he sits on a couch like this. He's like this. But sideways. Legs are dangling over. And he goes. This is what he goes. He goes, so what exactly brings you here? And I go. listen. I want to be straight up with you. When you decided I'm the opener, what did you visualize? And he goes, I'll never forget, this changed everything. He goes, look, every year we get a band and we want to make that band big. And you know what happens? Our fans don't show up. The band is bummed because they're playing in front of 1,000 people or 2,000 people. And then we feel bad and we want to launch bands. It's a pain in the ass. He goes, so we hired you because you know how to read a crowd. This is what he said. You know how to read a crowd. You know our audience. You are our audience. So I'll leave the creativity entirely up to you.
I go, well, what? I have a sheet, what they want. And he looks at it and he takes it, rolls it up and throws it. He goes, you talk to me. He goes, tell me the first thing you need. I'm going to be dead honest with you. Is it in the round? He goes, it's in the round. I went, okay. In the round at a Metallica show. That's like, remember when you went to the circus and you saw the guy, the top hat come out with the bull whip and the lion cage? That's what this is. They stick the comedian in the middle of a Metallica crowd and the lions are at his back every other second. So you got because once it ain't like a comedy club. If 10 people don't like you, it becomes 50 real quick. You lose everyone real freaking quick. So, but the coolest thing he said was, here's the most important, Jim. He goes, you don't have to be funny. Just tell the stories how you met us. Tell your stories. You know, tell my knapsack story. Tell the story how you first had dinner with James. Tell the story about when you came, the MTV icon, and you were on the plane with Ozzy. Tell, that's up to you, man. I trust you. It's like, and the minute he said that, it lifted all the pressure off me. And then I realized I didn't like people say you're opening for Metallica. So because it wasn't really opening. I really, at the end of the day, was the hype guy. Right. I was it's a TV show. You come out and you go, hey, you know, here's what's going to happen. And what I had to do is just keep everyone entertained until they came out, which is what I eventually did. We had a metal sing-along. We had Metallica game shows. I'd bring someone off the stage, and I loved when they got booed off the stage. It was nothing more entertaining when someone's like, I know everything about Metallica. And we'd sit down, and they're in front of 15,000 people, and they're getting every – they freeze up, and they're getting everyone wrong, and people's like, you suck. You know, I start belly laughing. Like, dude, I can't protect you right now. So we would – and then I would go backstage with a camera. I needed screens. And that's another thing. When I told Lars, I went, I need screens. He picks up the phone. He goes like this. And he goes, log. This is the production manager. How much does it cost to have those big screens? Like, remember when we did the tour with the Black Owl? I need 4 screens so people could see Jim hanging from the ceiling. That's great. Okay. Hey, I swear to God, he hangs up and he goes, what else do you need? Oh, and for the first month of the tour, Lars, every single night before he'd go on the stage, would come up to me. Is there anything we could be doing to make your life easier or better? Tell me anything you need. And it was the greatest gig. I was as my father would say, a pig in shit. Yeah. It was amazing.
Wait, Jim, what is the knapsack story?
My wife's pregnant with our first child. This is 99. And Lars calls and is like, hey, let's hang out tonight. Now, back then, Lars would hang out. We'd hang out differently on different levels. I think people have this perception that Jim Brewer's like this frat boy, whatever. I'm far from it. Back then, I like to catch a buzz, ride the evening, sip on some beer, you know, red wine. I'm living the dream. This guy would put on a hat and just ease off to the races. So we're in, as I pick him up in the taxi, we're heading down the village, and there's a knapsack in the taxi. And I pick it up, and I see it's an NYU student. I went, oh, my God, I'm going to be a hero. And at the time, Half-Bae just went on video. So it's like, oh, my God, the guy from Half-Bae saved my books, my $500. So I couldn't wait to make this guy's day. So I'm carrying this thing. It's, don't ask me why, it's annoying Lars. I don't know if it, at the time, it's just, you don't look cool with a knapsack. Take the freaking, all night, dude, take the knapsack off your back. You look ridiculous. I went, I'm going to make the guy's life. He goes, fuck that guy. He's careless. He needs to learn a lesson. His fucking mother probably, he's going, his mother paid for it and shit. That's why you don't fucking respect the books. Fuck that guy. I'm like, dude, relax. It's on my back. Relax. So now we go to the Boston Comedy Club. I do my set, and we go in the basement, and we're doing a shot, and some guy, now, he starts to get hopped up. I mean, hopped up. And I haven't really seen let's bring it guy. I haven't seen this guy. Right. I've been to parties with him, and it's always like, hey, man, I love you too. I haven't seen the, are you ready to do this guy? I haven't seen that guy. So some guy comes up, and he's like, hey, man, can I bum a cigarette? He clearly knows who Lars. He knows. He's freaking staring at him like a zoo animal. Right, and so right. He walks over to him. He's like, can I bum a cigarette? And he turns like, did it ever occur to you that maybe sometime tonight you need a fucking cigarette? And maybe that people work real hard for their fucking cigarettes and you shouldn't bum them from fucking away. Okay, why don't we go to the next? Let's get out of here. And again, he's like, take the fucking upside. Now he's getting like, I don't know if he was doing shots of tequila, but whatever it was, he went from happy to fuck you, fuck you. So we
I go commend out you to, for staying with the next. I would have shed that thing after the third request.
Oh no, I was hanging out to him, man. I'm bigger than him. I'll squash him. So I'm walking, and he a couple times he tried pulling off. Like, dude, I swear to God, I'll squeeze your fucking head. You do that again, don't do that. So he now we go outside. Now we're leaving because I'm getting nervous. He's, you know, because there's five of these people that are now annoyed, bumming a cigarette. And I don't feel like fighting because I don't want any part of this. So let's get out of here. So I know a place we're going to go to. Okay, great. We go out in the street. We leave the Comedy Cellar, make a left. He goes, can I just eat a knapsack for a second?
Can't let it go.
I went, sure. He threw it. I totally fell for it. Yeah, fell for it. Hook, line, sinker. He grabs it and tosses it. Across the street, it lands, busts open, books all over the place. There's your fucking knapsack hall. Let that guy learn a lesson. Oh my god. This is... And then the night got crazy. Then we went, you know where 6th Avenue got crazy. You have 6th yes. Avenue and 4th,
yep.
You know, where they play basketball.
Yep, right by the cellar.
Yes, so the light is green there, and the cars are going, and he just keeps walking into the street, and cars are screeching, almost hitting him, and he stops, and he's banging on their hoods, and then he walks on the hood, and full-blown rock star stuff that you see on VH1 going, what the fuck are you doing? So... Then I just remember going to this very private upstairs club, which I will never forget, and I always look for it. It's somewhere in the village. I to this day I couldn't tell you, but I remember sitting down, and it was Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Gwyneth Paltrow. The guy from the Backstreet Boys that wore the cowboy hat. Right. And Dave Matthews. All sitting in a circle. And I'm just sitting there going, there's $1 billion here in me. What the hell am I doing here? I can't. Thank you. I'm getting reprimanded by my way.
What did you do?
Tell stories about Mars that make him look bad.
Don't make it's him look late. Bad. It makes him look like a rock star.
Exactly. I told the great story of him. He's this is just a night. So anyway, so that the night ended with me going, "Hey man, my wife's pregnant. It's about 1:30. I'm going to head home. And he's like, dude, have a good night. This was a great hang. But, and he goes, fuck that knapsack. I'm like, yeah.
But I love that he wanted you to tell that story.
I know. Yeah, no, he was totally cool. He's one of the, I have to say, he's one of the smartest individuals that I've met maybe in one of my all-time lifetime. And the way he gives to others is probably not seen a lot in the public eye. Like he's a major giver.
You literally mentioned a concert that I think was my first concert, which was them opening for Ozzy on the Shot in the Dark tour. They were on Master of Puppets tour, and it was at Nassau Coliseum.
I was there.
There, so I was too. But when you know, that was my first concert ever. And that was one where I realized, because back in the day they used to throw M80s from the upper decks of the arena. Like now, forget it. None of that stuff will happen. But you would, every once in a while, you just say, like, holy shit.
These concert goes today don't know. We were risking our lives going to our music. First of all, you had the M80s. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the lights go out, go, go, boom, light beat from you, and you see someone's face split open, like, oh my God, they're playing Turbo Lover. Then it was, you had the flame, people brought the aerosol cans in the concert, they light the lighter, and you have a flamethrower.
Yes.
So the chick with big hair in front of you, her hair's getting burnt. And you're like, you know the risk.
Dude, I saw Dio. Dio was doing a show at the Coliseum too, and he had the big dragon.
With the big round dragon, and he moved too. He was in the round. Yeah, he was moving.
And motherfuckers were throwing M80s. And one of them went off right by the dragon, and Dio got pissed off and left the stage. He's like, fuck you.
He left. I was at that This is great too. So Judas Priest is coming around, and this is maybe it was Defenders of the Faith. I don't know which tour it was. And all I remember was Dokken was opening for him.
I was at that show too. That was the Turbo tour.
Yeah, you know what? It was Turbo. Yeah. That's when they started wearing the long jackets, and you're like, oh man, it's coming to an end. So he goes, this one guy brought his girlfriend. I'm like, dude, don't bring a chick to Judas Priest. They're not a radio band. He's like, no, she's cool. So we're all highly against it. We're already agitated she's coming. Because back then we were so into the music that if you came, you didn't know like every other song. I'm already annoyed. I'm angry. It's like bringing someone that doesn't know baseball. Like, what does it mean? What? What's the question? Dude, you just come here again. Why did you come here? I'm a hot dog. Trying to watch the fucking game. So, sure enough, I think they're in their second song, and boom! Her face splits open.
No!
Oh, yeah, like right here. Boom, M80. Boom, it splits open right here. And it's cut.
You can't hear
anything. I'll never forget how pathetic, now that I think about it, and how selfish. We just looked at him. We're like, you got to get her out of here, bro. But you drove us. You got to call your mother. We told you. No chicks at Priest. Now but this is on you. I don't tell you. I'm not leaving. They haven't done Electric Eye yet. I'm not going anywhere.
Not leaving. Meanwhile, if it was your face, it would be a whole different story.
Covering.
I wouldn't have left. I would have grabbed a rag. I was like, it's okay. I'm right. Okay, still bleeding. All right.
So you were on a plane with Ozzy? There's another one. Like, you get to run with these guys, man. It's crazy.
I'm the Forrest Gump of comedians. So MTV icon as Metallica. They didn't want me. Metallica wanted me. MTV, I think, wanted David Spade, and Metallica was like, no, we want Brewer. Right. So, sorry, Dave. MTV calls, and they go, listen, we can't get you on flight. We need you here by tomorrow, and we couldn't book a flight. So I'm like, so what do you want me to – so what are you saying? I'm not – so I don't know if someone Metallica said figure it out. They called back like a half hour later. We do have a way for you to get out there. I don't know if you're into it. It's a private jet. Never been on a private jet.
I don't know if you're into it.
Okay. They go, it's the Viacom jet, so it's a really nice jet.
Hang on. We
lost you there? Sound.
Yep, okay, yeah. Here we go.
There you go. Because the only problem is, and we don't know if you care, but Ozzy's on the plane. Going, Ozzy's coming on the plane? It was in the height of his TV show on MTV.
Oh, yeah, so they did anything you wanted back then.
It's like, holy shit, okay. So I get on the plane, and I'm there with my wife, and I'm already blown away by the whole private jet. They're like, oh, my God. They had flat-screen TVs before they existed. Because I remember looking at it. It came out from the table. Well, what is that? Oh, it's a flat screen. It comes out in years from now. Like, why? There was like a buffet on there. It was nutso. And then all of a sudden, I see the limo pull up, and I'm looking out the window, and it's Ozzy, and he's, you know, he's walking, and he gets on the plane. I'm just staring at him, and in the middle of flight, his daughter Kelly comes and sits across from my wife and I, and she goes, do you watch the show? And she had an English accent. I went, yeah, I'm trying to not to be idiot. Like, yeah, I watch the show.
Yeah. Right.
And she goes, do you know the episode where Jack wants to see a movie and my mother gets very upset and won't let him watch it? I went, yes, I've been dying to know. What's the movie? She goes, the one you're in with Dave Chappelle.
No way.
She goes, I loved it, but that they wouldn't show it, she wouldn't even let it mention. She was just like, and so I had to go find the episode, and Sharon's like, what is this? This is rubbish. Absolutely. You're not watching this. He said, come on, man. This is the greatest movie right now. Oh my God, that's so freaking nuts.
That's so wild. Yeah, and so what was Ozzy like? Because I always, like, in watching the Osbournes, that was, you know, growing up, you know, especially those first two solo albums, like, he was a god.
And he was god.
And then to watch him on the Osbournes, it was like, oh, wow, he's just like, you know, dad trying to use the remote, which, you know, I'm sure he had, look, for all the things that Sharon has done to maybe exploit some of his talents, she's also kept him from being dead. So she definitely needs credit for that.
Very true. So I'll give you two. I'll give you one cool Ozzy story. So where the only time I got to say something to him was when he had to pee on the plane. So he gets up and starts shuffling. You know, you got all these chains on, ding, 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 ding. And it's funny because the plane's rocking, so it would take him like 10 minutes. He gets so close, and then he loses a foot or two. And as he's going by, and I go, Ozzy, I just want to tell you, I'm a big fan. I saw Metallica open up for you. And he looked at me, he's like, oh, yeah, I was wonderful. And he just kept walking. Oh, man, that's all I got. All right. So, but here was a cool moment for me. Another Metallica thing. James asked me to present him with this Music Cares Award. It's for sobriety. Has to be, I don't know, late 2000s maybe. So now he just goes, yeah, it's kind of a, he never explains everything. He's like, yeah, dude, it's just kind of, it's for sobriety and they kind of honor people. And that night is kind of a big deal. Do you know Bill Graham is? Like, nah, I don't know Bill Graham. Like, I'm doing a thing for Bill Graham. And it's kind of cool. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure. So what do you want me to do? He's like, just say a few words. And okay. Now, I fly to L.A. They put me up. I see the whole band's there. We're hanging out. And then we show up to the venue. And he's telling me how he goes, you know, what's the guy's name? Tom Waits was a real, it was tough. Tom Waits is going to be here. I go, who the hell is Tom Waits? He's like, oh, he's a big time. I don't even know what the hell he sings. Jazz, whatever. Whatever he sings. He goes, he was pretty, they finally got him. There were a lot of demands and blah, blah, blah. I went, oh, all right. So cool. All right. Tom Waits here. So I walk in and the bottom theater is set up like living rooms. They took out all the seats and the general public sits in the balcony and there's no filming it, no audio, no recording, which is a damn shame because if you heard the songs that night, you would have been blown out of your mind. So I look at the front and it's Ozzy's whole family. I'm like, oh shit. Then I see Alice in Chains. I'm like, oh my God, it's Alice in Chains. then it's the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Now I'm sitting with James' wife, my wife, and this guy with tattoos and some other chick. And I remember going, yeah, this is Jesse, this is Sandy. I'm like, hey, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. I have no clue who they are. So I'm taking it all in. I see that Margaret Chow is there. And Margaret Chow goes up to give an award to this Bill Graham guy. And she gets full-blown political. It's like, hey, Bill Graham's and this politician starts and blah, 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 blah. And vote this way, vote that way. I'm like, oh, my God. So all that's going on. It's like, all right, I'm going to be – I'll definitely – bring no politics to the table and just stick to the game plan. So now I go up and I'm staring in the front row at Ozzy, at the guys from Alice Chains, and all these people. And I give a really heartfelt thing. I gave this whole, which I know it sounds corny, but I'm also a deep conspiracy guy. I go far and wide with, who controls what, who controls media, who controls the industry, who controls Hollywood, who controls music, all that. And we can, that's a whole nother conversation. But if you don't think it's controlled by people, then I don't know what to tell you. So with that said, one of the things I said that night when I went, you know, the worst term that was ever put out there, which I truly believe, is sex, drugs, and rock and roll. The reason being is you have, if you even look at some of Ozzy's lyrics and some of the older, you know, when Black Sabbath came out, some of those lyrics, they're basically exploiting war and politics.
Yep.
Which especially not Sabbath, many people were doing. Judas Priest, all these metal bands. And then they said, oh, they're Satan worshipers and they're devils. Right. And that's always the go-to. It's a white supremacist. They're evil. That's them going, don't listen, don't listen, whatever the hoopla cloud is. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, I look more intently to see what their message truly is. So I said, you know, and it really sucks because it's like saying Bob Marley, yeah, well, he was a stoner. So they put the label in it so you don't listen to the words, you don't listen to the message. Mm-hmm. And I said, you're all very powerful with your message, very powerful. And I said, your lyrics are so deep and touching, especially a lot of Metallica stuff. I learned more about war and my father in World War II by listening to their lyrics than any history book. And that's the truth, you know, For Whom the Bell Tolls and Disposable Heroes. Like, oh, my God. So
the room was like, I was like, well, maybe I got too serious. And then I did like a little impression or two and it was fine. So this is the crazy part. I come off and this beautiful woman comes up to me. And she goes, my name's Cindy. Can I just tell you, that was one of the most powerful, beautiful speeches I've ever heard. And I don't know who you are, but I want to start following you. I thank you so much for that. Like, you made me tear up. I'm like, oh, thank you. I was like, who is that chick? Jeez. And she's sitting with us. I'm like, wow, it was really nice of her to do that. Yeah. All right. Cut to is the end of the night. And the MC is supposed to bring on Tom Waits. I don't know who this Tom Waits is, but I know where everyone's been waiting for Tom Waits. And this is a big to-do to have him. And the MC, Greg Barron, is the comedian's name, did an amazing job that night. He goes, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Tom Waits. He doesn't come out. The whole room is starting to be like, oh, it's... Greg Barron comes back out. My apologies, his piano, one last tune. And his poor bastard has to do another 10 minutes. He goes, okay, we're ready. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Waits. Still doesn't come out.
Oh, Jesus.
Greg comes out. It's really uncomfortable now. But everyone's afraid to say something because this guy is so like, oh, it's Tom Waits. Third time, comes out. Introduces him. We're waiting about 15 seconds. He's not out. Ozzy breaks the ice and goes, oh, for crying out loud. Come on, Tom. You're not a Beatle for crying out loud. I mean, am I serious? And the whole room starts howling. And Sharon's going, Ozzy, right, come on. He's not McCartney. You're crying out. And then as he's saying that, the curtain opens. And there's Tom Waits comes. Blah, 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 blah. I said, this is what we're waiting for?
Right. No, such a
Are you kidding me? What the hell is going on? So as we get in the car that night and we're driving home and I'm talking to Mrs. Hetfield, I go, wait, you know, that woman was so nice that came up to me. My wife goes, yeah, I saw that. She came. She was like tearing up while you were talking. I went, who was that? She goes, that was Sandra Bullock. I went, what?
No way.
What? Wow. She goes, yeah, she was sitting with Jesse James. I went, what? How did I not? Are you serious? What? And of course, I've been waiting for a phone call ever since. Like, we're in a movie. I never get those phone calls. Ever.
She's going to follow you, she said.
Ever.
Jim, I could waste your time all night listening to these stories, and I don't want to do that. I really appreciate the time that you've given us. There's so much more we could get to, maybe another time.
Wait, are you excited about Steve Cohen?
I'm super excited about Steve Cohen. I know he got some heat this week. I don't understand that world. I just know people were really, you know, the Barstool guy was going off, and I do follow him. And he explained it really well. So I was like, and this is what I learned about humanity. When it comes to politics, sports and politics, are very similar as far as once you hate a team or a politician, mm-hmm. everything's shut. And you ain't going to listen whatsoever to the others. Zero. No matter what. And no matter how bad your teammate is or your sports team or politician is, you will find a way to defend it. Mm-hmm. Hence, when Jose Reyes, he beat his wife or whatever, you're like, listen, she might have had a drug problem. She might have. There might be a lot missing here. There might be a lot missing. Yeah. Let's not hang the guy because you can't take him out of the lineup.
Right.
So when it comes to Steve Cohen, I think right now I'm playing the, listen, I I don't understand this stock thing. All I know is this guy's gonna put together a good team, and he's gonna make it go to an end. I did get excited about him. I love that a billionaire that loves the team is behind it. So let's just hope nothing gnarly comes out about him, or if it already did, it's taken care of swiftly.
I think the GM took care of that with his
it's kind of hard to top that one.
Sending photos of your genitalia usually is
seriously what is wrong? forget just that's a part of us I can't grab. You know, I've been in the limelight. I've been in the hoopla. Even my own wife, I've never had the urge of like, hey, I'm going to send you a little. or whatever happened in the past with whoever. Like, hey, is it okay if I do this?
But I think 40% of men want to send that. Like, they think that women want that.
I don't know. You think 40%?
I think it's 40%.
That means two of us. Or one and a half. Or one and three.
Yeah,
quarters.
No way.
Here's what I think. I think it mostly happens. And this is the problem with power and vanity. When you become in a power position, it doesn't have to be in a huge power position. I used to work at Sears in a pink department. Let me tell you something. You work in department, the minute that person gets a red badge or they can cite voids, they can potentially be assholes. It's just because of their little badge. I now have the power to, you know. And now you put that on a bigger level. I think, you know, when you become something that the public sees you as, your morals are tempted 24/7, and you lose grip with a lot of things. I think it happens more in the world of people in power because they think A, they're not gonna, they think you want it because you're a position of power, and other people, the naive people on both sides, female and male, throw themselves at them. And whether people want to believe that or not, it's just true, which is why guys worth $1 billion, it doesn't matter what they look like. They could be like just 450 pounds with gold hair here. Oh, I find him beautiful.
On the inside. On the inside.
So that's I think that it warps what's real. You're really caught up more in a thing than human contact and the soul.
Yeah. And but it was unsolicited though. Like, I mean, according to her, like, he just, like, at no point did she even like flirt with him. Like, that's even more weird. Like, to just randomly think this
weird,
will be the
man.
Thing.
I don't have any patience for anyone that I'm sure I did dumb things in the past. I can honestly say, unless I blacked out, I sleep real good at night knowing none of that crazy shit's coming to haunt me. Real good.
Yep. Absolutely.
I still get it. I don't get it. It's weird. It's weird to me. It's weird.
I know. Well, I want everyone to go to jimbrewer.com. If you haven't, if these stories alone don't get you to want to go see him, I don't know what will. I mean, he even does a residency at the Paramount because, you know what? Why Vegas? Right in Long Island, and I was at one of them, and it was
you
great.
Were?
Yeah, absolutely. And he tells stories, and there's a little of everything. And
were you in the beginning when I was still trying to figure it out?
It was one of the first ones. It actually wasn't even so much a residency when I first went. It was just, and then I think a month later they announced, a month or two later, that you were going to start doing it more frequently.
Cool. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so it was great, man. Seeing Jim live is a great time, and it seems like a lot of it, you know, just because it's a residency, I just got the feeling that I was seeing stuff that you didn't do the last time when I saw it, which was
well.
Great,
the good news is, I was refused a comedy special. So I took that to my advantage, and I went, I had 2 one-hour specials that I wanted to put out there. And, you know, everyone said, well, you know, you could film it yourself and release it. Or the best thing that happened was that residency, because I could just keep rotating. Mm-hmm. Here, if you came to show number 3, show number 4 is going to be a different hour. Show number 5 is going to be another different hour. And that's what that place allowed me to do. It allowed me to do half hour to 40 minutes up front of stuff I don't do, off the cuff, whatever was going on. And I kind of fell in that pattern. So it's really worked to my advantage for myself. I love that people, I have a crazy cult following. They're like, this is my 7th time yep. in the last 4 months seeing you. Like, what? I saw you in Pennsylvania and you did the, you ended with this whole colonoscopy thing. But then the other two, I didn't see you because I brought friends and I said, you got to see the, and then you didn't do it. And then, oh my God, the one night, the one guy wanted to ask you a question. You did an hour on, like, what it was like growing up in Long Island. It's my 7th time. I don't know why I'm imitating my fans talking like that, because they're a lot more intelligent sometimes.
but like, seriously, like, if you see Jim, it's almost like he's like the Grateful Dead of comedy, where you don't know what set you're getting. You don't know what you're seeing. So if you go 2 nights in a row, you're not getting the same thing. You know, you're getting something different all the time.
Nah, I get bored. Yeah. I have so much respect for all the guys that go from beginning to end, and that's their set. I start losing my mind. I lose my mind. It's like eating the same cracker every night. I can't do it. I can't do it. It drives me nuts.
Yeah. Well, everybody should get tickets, without a doubt. Check out Jim's podcast as well. Jim, hang on 1 second. I'm just going to wrap it up, but I'll be right back. Thank you again for joining us. I really appreciate it. There's so many topics I didn't even get to that I want to, so maybe next time.
Maybe next time, whatever you want. I hope this was fun. Yeah, was it cool? You know, Lori's like awesome. Young, so I don't know. She's like, oh, my God. This guy in the middle. He's like, I'm a baby. Threw her out.
He's always strange. That's pretty much him. This is no different. If he starts talking,
gig,
something's
I don't know.
Weird.
Is he on TikTok?
I ain't So, wait, so it's crazy. So we were talking about, obviously, before we do these shows, we start talking about, like, you know, how do we know the celebrity? How do we know the person that's coming on, whether it's a musician, whatever? And obviously, growing up, one of the first things I saw you in was you doing Goat Boy, but I didn't speak English. So, like, at the time, I'm watching you do these, like, bits on SNL, and I'm like, what the fuck is this place? What is this country?
Out of all things, I had to represent the country. I completely destroyed us all. Here's America.
Actually, retrospect, Goat Boy is an accurate representation of this country.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I wish that's how Franco started greeting people. Right.
Yeah, I just figured, like, it was that. And then besides that, I saw some of your stand up on Comedy Central. It used to play when I would have days off from school, like, randomly. So I would catch you on that. And then Half Baked. It just, like, every like 11-year-old kid who has had a television has seen it, and then, like, it's still everyone's favorite movie somehow. So this is actually a fantastic, like it was great chatting with you, hearing the stories. Rob and I are both pretty big metalheads, so yeah, this is great.
What do you guys listen to right now?
Right now, what am I listening to right now? Well, so I'm, like, living in town with like, in a town where, like, my girlfriend's parents live, and so every time we hang out with them, I only listen to Cowboys from Hell by Pantera. And that's what I've been listening to. Yeah. And they're like, this is good stuff.
Were you into System of a Down at all?
Yeah. So, again, I also was really into System of a Down. One of my friends and I were talking about Spiders the other day, because we were like, the one record that we always listened to back when we were teenagers was Spiders. So it's actually funny. These are two bands that I listen to all the time.
Yeah. It's Spiders with Sugar. Whoop,
yep.
Weep.
Yep.
Quick story.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On my tour bus, 2003, maybe 2002, 2003, in San Francisco, Lars comes on the bus. That whole tour, all we're doing is blasting System of a Down the back, and we do our own little mosh pit in the back of the bus.
In the bus?
Yeah, yeah. We stand on the seats, and we jump on one another. Lars comes on, mosh pits in the back of our bus. Oh, I can't show you. I was going to show you on my phone. He texted a little while ago. He texted and goes, do you remember moshing on your bus? Went, how can I forget that? I took him and I would throw him down. And we were moshing to the song Sugar. And he would sing it this close in my face. And then we get too close, I grab him and I throw him back down. And we pile on him. And I'll never forget, the end of the night, he said, if Metallica ever were to go down, I would pass the hat on to System of a Down. And that's when they came out with Saint Anger. It always made me wonder if that was kind of influenced because there was no solos.
A little bit. Yeah, you know what? You never know. And that's when they were making that documentary was all kind of around that. It just looked like it wasn't their proudest moment, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know,
so anyway, I kept you on too long. I apologize.
It's all good. And just to answer your question about what I'm listening to, I've been into that band Ghost quite a bit. But then I saw them live and it kind of I'll tell you what ruined it. They were really good musically. They opened for Maiden. I saw them open for Maiden about a year ago. What a show. And they're like 68 years old and it's just like effortless.
In the Hills, just Bruce Dickinson sing it. My friend just said to me, just listen to just the vocals. Oh my God.
Is it good or is it bad? I'm afraid.
It's amazing.
Because it was one of the best shows I've ever seen just now. And it's so effortless to them. Like, it's effortless. And they've been doing it their whole lives, you know?
Wiggles for adults, bro.
No, it's so true. But the one thing about the Ghost show is they have this whole, like, theatrical thing and sacrifice. And sometimes, yes, it's a little much. But between songs, it ruined it because the guy was just a normal dude. Like, was waiting. Like, I wanted them to not, I wanted them to not talk and keep the mystery. The guy's like, yes. And he has, like, a Norwegian accent. He's like, yes, who is getting laid tonight? And I was like, oh, that's just ruined it.
Yeah.
It's just ruined
it. The show.
Yeah, he was like, they're singing about sacrifice and all this stuff. He goes, yes, everyone getting nice and drunk. Wee. And I'm like, oh, man, he killed it.
That kind of kills the mood.
The minute I saw them with outfits, I'm like,
that's too much. I know.
I'm out. But,
all right, Jim, hold on one more second. Once again, go to jimbrewer.com. Get some tickets to this upcoming tour. Jim needs it, as you can see. There's a nice house coming. Right? He needs it badly. Thank you for listening to The Hole. I am Rob Sprans.
I'm Franco Del Valle.
And I'm Lori Levine.
Later, motherfuckers.